Welcome to the 905er. My name is Roland Tanner.
I am Joel McLeod.
And we just wanted to start off today by giving a quick shout out to our new Patreon supporters and thank you to them. This is a really important part of what we're going to be doing going forward. Obviously, we want this podcast to be something that improves and gets better and better. And we need a certain amount of money to be able to do that. One of the things that I think it's worth mentioning is we've had quite a few journalists come on here now, and they've been very generous in giving their time free of charge, but these are professional people. It'd be great if we could offer people, you know, money to come onto the podcast. And there are also various fees, obviously, with just running this. And it is really important. And the support that quite a few people have shown now already is so appreciated. So thanks so much for doing that. And we do encourage other people to consider it as well.
I think it should also be pointed out that media is suffering a huge setback in the recent years because of just a changing model, I think, of how people get their news. Podcasts, I think, is a new, what we're doing here is a new industry, and it's a new way for people to hear from voices that they wouldn't normally hear in a format that they normally aren't able to enjoy. And by contributing to our Patreon and donating just $5 a month to us, you help us keep it going. You help us explore other options to bring information to you that matters to you. And it keeps us independent. It keeps us able to not be accountable to you, the listener, to hear what you want to hear, not what big legacy media wants you to hear. And that's an important part of what we were trying to do here from the get-go. And so to the existing Patreon supporters that we have, thank you very much. You've helped us on our journey. And if you've been considering trying to support independent media, especially local independent media like what we're doing here, please go visit our Patreon page. The link is in the show details, and contribute $5 a month. It'll help go a long way, and you'll be doing a good thing.
Absolutely. And we're truly honored that so many people have already come on board. It's it means a huge amount. It really does mean a huge amount, and it makes us feel like we're doing something that people are appreciating. And this is just the beginning, really. We hope this is just the beginning.
We do have big big visions for this endeavor, and we want you to be part of it. So please do consider supporting us for a small, you know, price of a Starbucks coffee. Will go a long, long way.
So let's get back to the news. And, you know, it's COVID again, isn't it? I mean, it's dominating everything, but it's, you know, and you can say, well, this is a national problem, not a 905 issue, but really it's 905 too. And in many ways, what's been happening in 905 has kind of typified the challenges and the debate about the best way to handle this.
Well, the 905 region has become the epicenter, at least in Ontario, for COVID-19. You know, we've got, I think every region in the 905 is pretty much, if not locked down, just close to it. I mean, we're not, we're it. We're COVID-19 central, unfortunately. And when you're in the red zone as it is, it's impossible not to talk about it. And I think our discussions this week with Jill and Laura were right on the money. We didn't time it for this by any stretch of the imagination. It just kind of fell into our laps. But that's the timing of it.
You know, it seems like the last few weeks we've been arguing about the right to go and buy a burger and sit down inside the restaurant. And that's an example I use because about a week ago, I went and bought a burger and I didn't sit down in the restaurant. I had no intention of sitting down. I wanted to get in and get out. But I went in there, and I'm not going to name the place because I think they were probably abiding by every regulation. But I went in. It was pretty much packed. Every table was full. It was hot. It was steamy. There was a big lineup. And I should have turned around and walked out, and I didn't. Those were the regulations at the time. But the price of that insistence that we try and keep restaurants as free and open as possible has been what we've heard from Laura and Jill today, that they can't even 6 foot is too close to be to your daughter or your mother. Or the best you can do is sit outside in the freezing cold next to a busy road where you can't even hear each other speak. You know, it's easy to blame the promise for this, but I'm going to blame all of us that we have prioritized our own comfort over people who are extremely vulnerable. I certainly tweeted this earlier in the week, you know, that it was Remembrance Week, and quite rightly, everybody's talking about the sacrifices of previous generations. Well, there's previous generations, many of them are still alive, and many of them are in long-term care with dementia, like Jill's mother, who grew up in London during the Second World War with the Blitz. Not every person that we remember needed to have fought in the war to have experienced and come through those horrors, and those are things that we remember too. And yet, we're not going to treat people like that as a priority. It doesn't seem right.
I agree with what you're saying. I mean, we've had small business people on the podcast, and I've spoken with small business people outside of this, just to, you know, I'm curious how are they doing. And the general consensus is the status quo isn't working. And I think that's the frustrating part, is that we want to keep small businesses alive, restaurants alive, and we want to keep them going. And I get it; they are the backbone of our economy. We do need to come up with a solution. The problem is, our case numbers just keep going up. That whatever plan is in place does not seem to be working. And I can't, you know, I can't really blame us for it, Roland. I'm going to disagree with you on that one, because I'll be honest, I don't know how I can help bring COVID-19 numbers down. I think it's unfair to put that burden on the rest of us to say, guys, you know, when Doug Ford stands to the microphone and says, guys, you know, you get your act together. I think we all look at each other and say, we want to, but how? You know, is it safe to go to a restaurant? I suppose so. Is it, you know, what's the cost of that? And if the cost is we're locking seniors away in long-term care homes and people with disabilities in their group homes, you know, is that a price we're willing to pay? And I want to think, no, we're not. But, you know, it's kind of what Jill was saying on the episode. We need to restart rethinking this. We need to start thinking how that this is going to change the way our society operates. And the funny thing is, I know small businesses are all on board with change. The problem is they don't know how, you know, and they can't be blamed. They you know, they make burgers and they serve drinks. They're not epidemiologists. They're not these scientists that can say, okay, I'm going to switch over to doing it this way to make it safer. They want to know how, and in some cases, they will need capital. And that's the frustrating part, is this provincial government does not seem to want to do the hard work that's necessary now. Is that we need to start thinking of changing the way that we do things, whether that's small businesses might need some capital to switch online to make sales and to talk about rebranding themselves in an online digital world. I spoke with one company. I'm not going to name names either, because I don't have permission to, but I spoke with them, and they were saying it was frustrating. They saw this coming. They tried to put the effort into going online digitally, and they put all this capital of their own funds into it, and put all the effort into it. They started to rebrand online on their social media, and then Doug just said, "Okay, we're reopening. We're all back to in-store purchases," and all that work, all that effort was for naught. And so they're like, "Oh, okay, we just spent all this money for no reason." They went back into in-store purchases, and now it looks like, "Oh, we're going back into another lockdown or stage red or whatever we are now." And so now that's the way they're going to survive, is doing an online retail experience. Now, you know, where's the provincial plan to help that, to say, to provide either a low interest loan or just a preferably some kind of grant to help facilitate this, so that, yeah, we can, our economy can still function, but maybe if we need to go into stricter isolation protocols to keep everyone safe, then we can do so. Or maybe we can ease up and allow a little bit more social interactions if need be. But there's no money being spent. I mean, we heard mentioned on the podcast early the other day, David Hurley had the Ontario Financial Accountability Officer on, and he said the government, the provincial government, is sitting on $9.3 billion in unspent COVID funds. I mean, that's a huge amount. You know, why isn't that going into increasing our testing capacity so that we can get ahead of this? We can do spontaneous testing to see where our hotspots flashing up. Yeah, you know, maybe we can get in front of it as opposed to muddling our way through as we currently are. It's a frustrating turn of events right now.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, there's a kind of dichotomy. I mean, when I was speaking about it being on us earlier, I didn't actually mean in the short term. I meant kind of more in the long term, that we have not prioritized long-term care as something in this province. In the short term, we've had the province sending mixed messages, confusing messaging that people simply don't understand. And I certainly don't blame people for hearing the different messages and picking the one that seemed most appropriate or convenient for them. So I don't think any blame comes to people for doing what they're told when what they're being told is all over the place. This $9 billion of spending is, it's like, you know, this $9 billion isn't there for next year. It's for COVID, which is happening now. Goodness knows, let's hope there's a vaccine. But we have no idea when that's going to come along.
Well, okay, on that note, Roland, here's the problem with waiting for a vaccine. This is part of a sidebar. You and I have both wanted to go get our flu shots this year. And we conveniently found out that we're both in the same family health office or group, and they both sent out emails to us saying that, yeah, the scheduled flu drive-through flu vaccination clinic that they had planned had to be canceled because, despite the fact that they ordered enough vaccines to accommodate what they were hoping would be a huge turnout, the province can't seem to figure out how to get it. They ordered 1,500 doses, and they only got 200 in their shipment. And then the weekend after, they ordered, again, 1,500. They got zero. And nobody seems to know where all these extra 5 million doses of flu vaccine are. The government has gone and license plate the simple flu vaccination program that was supposed to help alleviate COVID-19. And nobody seems to figure out where these flu vaccines are. And I'm sitting there going, wow, these guys can't even roll out the flu vaccine program. That's an annual thing. And we're expecting them to now be able to roll out a COVID-19 vaccination program whenever the vaccine arrives. I don't have a lot of confidence that it's not going to be a complete mess up like it's been with the flu vaccine.
Yeah, my expectation is that even if there was a vaccine tomorrow, we're looking at 6 to 12 months to roll this thing out to get to everybody. And it's not going to be rolled out tomorrow. I mean, not by any stretch of the imagination. And, you know, I mean, I have to mention again what the politicians in Halton have been doing for the last 2 or 3 weeks, which now is a complete 180. On October, I think it was the 25th, was when these letters were sent by Halton MPPs, PC MPPs, plus the mayor of Burlington and the mayor of Milton, plus another letter from all the municipal leaders in Halton saying, we're different. We're different was the words actually spoken by Mayor Burton. That wasn't in the letters. But basically saying Halton doesn't need to be sent back. Now, the most infuriating thing about this is that what we're seeing today in statistics, which is statistics going up and up and up, those infections were being transmitted pretty much on the day those letters were being sent. So all it required was a little bit of foresight to know that this was highly likely to be on the way. I mean, apart from anything else, it just seems incredibly politically short-sighted to have gone that road, to have pressured Halton to be treated differently, to try and do this process of negotiating with a virus, of trying to work around the regulations to find a way to make, you know, like you said a number of weeks ago, to say, well, we'll put things in a tent outside. Well, a tent is just a room. You know, the fact that it's outside doesn't keep the virus away necessarily. It was incredibly foolish. I wrote an article on the website a week or so ago now saying, you know, they owe us an apology. And since then, I kind of worded that fairly mildly. I would now put that much strongly and say, yeah, they really owe us an apology because that was a huge mistake. It was stupid. It was unnecessary. And the price of that may well have been higher COVID statistics now than we needed to have, and that doesn't help anybody, at least small business.
I think right now we need the politicians to step back. I really do believe that. I think, you know, the premier and the mayors, and not just in Halton, we've had mayors from all over, you know, in all over kind of chime in and say, oh, we got a handle on it. And no, we don't clearly. Our numbers are going up and up and up. I don't see any region that has a clear path to victory over this pandemic right now. So far, we just have regions that are not as affected as others, but that can change. And I think the problem is that we've been so reactionary to this pandemic. We don't have a proactive plan. Every time you hear Doug Ford step at the microphone and give his stern dad warning to all the Yahoos in Toronto and Peel, and presumably now we'll hear it for Halton and Hamilton as well, that, you know, we need to get our act together. And, you know, he has no problem with putting us in a lockdown so fast. And it's like, then do it. Do it now. It's like, put your money where your mouth is. Because by the time the numbers get up to a point that you think a lockdown is necessary, it's too late. Those numbers will keep on climbing. And like the virus doesn't care about your disappointment in us.
I mean, I don't know where this 800-pound gorilla went, but it's more of a kind of 3-pound little bunny rabbit, as far as I can see. I mean, and I'm being flippant about it, but I mean, you know, this is lives. People are dying because of the decisions that are being made. It seems to me, if you look at, you know, worldwide, you can say, well, you know, Ontario is not the only place having these problems. Sure. But if you look at the places that have really made a mess up, have really got this wrong, every time it's the politicians stepping in, trying to negotiate with a pandemic, refusing to take it seriously, trying to keep businesses open. We've seen it in the US. We've seen it now in Ontario. Look at the UK. Look at the parts of Europe where they didn't move quickly enough out of the gate. Every time it's been treated less seriously than it should have been, we've paid, everybody has paid a heavy price. When did we get this right? When were we most united as a province, as a country? When did we flatten the curve? In those early days when the politicians said, we need to get out of the way, we need to do what the doctors tell us. We got it right at that point. We did flatten the curve. We got this thing under control. And then the politicians said, well, hey, we haven't been doing enough the last couple of weeks. I guess we better start sticking our noses in again. And I'm someone who ran to be a politician. I believe in government. I believe in politicians being, many of them being good people with excellent intentions who can have enormous forces for good. But in this case, you cannot be political with a disease. You have to follow what the scientists tell you, who know so much more than we do, who understand statistics in a far more scientific and intelligent way than, I'm sorry, the mayors of Halton and Burlington, who are talking about scientific evidence and know nothing about science.
I find it interesting that every public health official who has access to social media, no one has praised that letter as being a path forward. No one has praised Doug Ford's handling so far. Everyone has been highly critical of both him and Dr. Williams. We're starting to see calls for Dr. Williams' resignation, but I think he's retiring in February, so that might be a null point. But we're seeing this is not the path we want to go down. I'm not seeing, it's frustrating to see this. We want the photo op as opposed to doing the hard work. The photo ops will come later. There'll be plenty of time for victory later, but we need to do the hard work now. Everything I've read, and again, I'm not a scientist, but the solution, a big part of it has to be better testing. We need to be able to test randomly and widely and get a good idea of where the virus is in our province. Waiting until you're infected and you show up for a COVID test it's again a reactionary program. Reactionary solution to this problem. We need to be proactive. We need to get ahead and find out where is the virus. If you want to talk a targeted economic plan, but that's not what's happening now. We don't have that. We have go until the virus gets so bad that we need to shut it down, and then you're you're as a business owner, you're told that weekend, oh, hey, we're going to shut you down on Monday. So good luck to you. And we won't let you know how it goes. And that's it, when you live in that solution, in that environment, business owners get panicky. They're concerned for their livelihoods, their employees, and understandable. But then it's just go, go, go. And that just fuels spread and growth. We need to start thinking differently. We need to start embracing technology. We need to start embracing, you know, it's, I believe that we can come up with a solution to this. I really do. I think we're smart. We're smart people. This isn't a foregone conclusion, but we need to be willing to change and to start thinking outside the box. And don't be worried. Stop being fearful of poll numbers dropping.
And stop trying to make political hay out of this. And I suspect he may have learned, Premier Ford may have learned that lesson this week. I mean, I wish he hadn't spent that time doing a tour of the province in the summer on his little victory tour, because, you know, maybe he could have spent that time doing some planning. But I mean, this is almost too easy to be critical, but boy, he gave us the ammunition. So what do you get? And then today you forwarded me an article this morning from Press Progress showing that the province is actually going to spend on its usual budget. It's going to spend less on long-term care in the coming year than it did this year. I mean, it's actually cut the budget. And then the previous year, it also underspent its own budget by 93 million. Now, the amounts that they're spending less than are not huge, but the point is, it shouldn't be going, come on, it shouldn't be going down right now. I mean, Jill spoke of the place where she is. She was highly complimentary of the staff, highly complimentary of the institution that her mother is in, but said, you know, it's worn out, it's tired. The design of these places is often absolutely wrong for controlling the spread of infection. This, we need to start looking at long-term care in the same way as we look at schools, hospitals, things like this. This is one of the basic functions of a government, to make sure that at the start of life and at the end of the life, you don't have to worry. You will have the care that you need, rather than, you know, this private for-profit institutions, which seem quite clearly to be doing a far worse job than
the problem others. Is we're expensive investments. Like human beings are expensive little creatures to put money in. I can't think of a single case where it's actually profitable to treat humans. Like when we get sick, and I do mean like sick, like we're talking cancer or any other long-term illness, we're expensive things to invest in. So I'm not surprised why for-profit medicine isn't the solution here. You can't treat us on the cheap, and especially as we get older and we become more frail and require more specialized, highly trained services to keep us comfortable and keep us alive. Yeah, you can't just do this on the cheap. You can't find a way, let's cut a corner here and a cut a corner there. Because after a while, you're right. As Jill said, you're living in a dilapidated housing structure that was scheduled to be demolished. And you have well-meaning, good people trying to do the best they can, under-equipped and understaffed. And that's the thing, is we've known about this since March. In March, the curtain was ripped away and we saw the ugly truth of our neglect in the long-term care, and as well as in our social service programs for people with disabilities. We just saw, like, oh wow, we've totally been neglecting this for decades, for generation, and now it's come back to haunt us in one gruesome global pandemic. And it's disheartening to say, well, they're still trying to do it on the cheap. They're still trying to find ways to cut corners and save the almighty taxpayer some money. And I'm saying, no, this isn't how I want my government to treat the less fortunate.
Well, and we will, every single one of us will be that less fortunate person. If we live a long and healthy life, the chances that we'll end up in long-term care just increase, don't decrease. We will be there. We have to have the foresight to see, you know, I'm trying to think, one, two, three of my immediate ancestors, parents, grandparents have ended up in long-term care one way or another because of dementia, things like that. You know, so I'd like to know that I'm not going to be living in a danger zone when I get to that age. Yeah. I'm willing to pay in my tax, you know, like to know that I will be safe when I get to that stage. I'm willing to cough that up in my tax.
I mean, we've seen that public health care is the way to go. You know, when you pool all of our tax dollars into a single universal paying healthcare system, it works because we have the bargaining power to go after more useful treatments. We're able to bring the cost of specialized care down, as opposed to you or I having to pay for our parents and, you know, maybe pay into some kind of privatized insurance program or whatever have you. You know, a public option is a more sensible way to go. You know, and I think of the entire our chat. I was thinking of Laura's experience with her daughter Emily, putting her daughter into a group home. Because, and I get it, you need to have some kind of specialized care as your child gets older. But the price to pay is that you're cut off from your loved ones. Your routine, and especially people with disabilities, with developmental disabilities, a lot of their lives are structured around routine and familiar faces, and to all of a sudden have it thrown upended, you know, and nobody says, well, let's try and fix it. Let's try and come up with a solution to go forward so that you can develop a new routine. It honestly is just borderline cruel and inhumane if it isn't by definition. I couldn't imagine Laura's story of having your daughter, not being able to hug your daughter or your, you know, if you know your son or whomever, but you have an employee who has to do it for you. There's something inherently wrong here, and we should all be collectively outraged about this and saying this has to be fixed now.
And there's a way. And parents like Laura, if you say to them, okay, you need to do X, Y, and Z, and then you can hug your daughter, they will do X, Y, and Z. I mean, they will do anything to do that. We know that there are ways to make it safe for one person to hug another person. And it's about, you know, ensuring your social network is sufficiently reduced that it's safe.
But people in the long-term care, if they have a long, stressful day, they can decide, well, I'm going to go walk in the park. It's a nice day out. I'm just going to go for a walk in the park to decompress and to get out of my headspace and just, you know, bask in the sunshine. And they should, absolutely. But those people in the long-term care homes and in the group homes, they can't. They've been locked away and their loved ones now have to stare at them through a screen door or a screen window. And there's just something inherently wrong. You have to wonder, is that the price that we're expected to pay to get through COVID-19? I'm not sure I want to pay that price. I don't want to be that society that we say that's acceptable so the rest of us can have a bit of comfort, especially because you and I both said this, it's not working. Our numbers aren't stabilizing. They're not going down. They're not being managed. They're just going up. So clearly this plan is not working. We need something different. And we need smarter people than us, Roland, and smarter people than Doug Ford and the mayors of Ontario to step in and say, let's figure out a new way of doing business because this is not, it's not working.
Well, I think that's a good place to leave it. I'll just mention that everybody will want to listen to our episode next week as well, where we're hoping to have people speaking to another recent development that really affects the 905 region, which is changes to legislation and regulation on conservation authorities. Very different subject, but again, something that will impact every single one of us and the cities that we live in the years going ahead. So that's it for this week, everybody. And make sure you check in again for our next episode next Tuesday.
that's it for this episode of the 905er. Thank you for listening. As always, you can send us your feedback, thoughts, and concerns, or ideas for future episodes to our email, info@905er.ca. We'd love to hear from you. You can help us keep the 905er going by financially supporting us through Patreon as well as PayPal. Visit us at 905er.ca and click on the support tab. As well, links are in the show notes for your convenience. Lastly, you can find us on social media. Search for the_905er on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and LinkedIn. So long for now. See you next time.
Connie Thiessen, the host of Broadcast Dialogue, the podcast. We focus on Canada and the challenges facing Canadian radio and TV, as well as highlighting those moving the industry forward from podcasting and streaming to new broadcast tech. Check us out at broadcastdialogue.com or your favorite podcast app.